There's a billboard right now on 71 Highway northbound that says this: "You are human, you are lovable, you are strong, you are enough." What a nice thing to read on your morning commute. But where did this message come from? It's not doing what billboards usually do, which is to say it's not selling anything. So who put it here and what's the story behind it? I'm Gina Kaufman. This is KCUR's Central Standard, and I'm joined in the studio by Nicole Leth, the artist behind the billboard, which has a much heavier backstory than you might imagine. Nicole, good morning.
Good morning.
So you are just a person who put up a billboard.
Yes, I'm an artist, but also a person.
A person who, it is amazing to me because it feels like you need to be a big company to do something like that. But you're a person who put up a billboard to tell people something you wanted them to hear.
Exactly.
Tell us again what the billboard says.
It says, "You are human, you are lovable, you are strong, and you are enough."
Why those words?
Those words are really important to me. Those words have gotten me through a lot of hard times. And they're also words that I say to people when they're hurting. So they come from an authentic space, and I think they help people discover their inherent worth and love.
You have a backstory that inspired you to think about talking to people about their inherent worth. Can you share just the very basics of that story?
Yes, of course. So when I was 17, I lost my father to suicide, and him and I were really, really close. We were very much the same person with the same heart, like felt life and everything with it to the extreme. And on that day when we lost him, I made a promise to myself that everything I put out into this world was going to have purpose, and that I was going to try to save lives through my artwork or my writing. And I realized that I can't save someone else's life for them, but I can create an empowering, compassionate, affirmative space for people to save their own lives. And that's the inspiration that led to this project.
What gave you the idea to use these giant canvases that hang over our skyline? On the one hand, it's so obvious, but on the other hand, like I said, we're not used to billboards being used this way. They are commercial in nature for the most part.
Yes. So truthfully, it was a trajectory. I started really small. I started in high school spray painting and graffitiing affirmations on abandoned buildings.
I love that because we think of, I think like the popular imagination about who's doing graffiti and why is like, I'm bad. You're like, you're good.
Yeah, I'm like, I just want to help. And then that elevated into me putting affirmations on stickers for probably the last 5 years and handing them out to people. And I saw the benefit of letting people discover these things on their own and that they could be adapted to whatever you're going through.
Can you back up and set the scene a little bit more for me of where you are when you're handing out stickers with affirmations to people?
Oh my gosh, I'm like everywhere. I will leave them on park benches. I'll leave them in coffee shops. I teach yoga, so I'll hand them out to students at the end of a class. I'll mail them out to strangers who order things that I, you know, that I make. Just anything. I always get really creative with how to disperse these affirmation stickers.
What do they all say that same things as the billboard or other things?
They all say other things. And the affirmations always change because I always want them to be really authentic to what I'm thinking about and feeling. So over the years, I've just had a myriad of affirmations and quotes on them.
What's the current affirmation sticker?
I have two that are in rotation right now. And there's one where it's just a sticker with probably 25 different affirmations just all together. And then the second one is a paragraph that I wrote about softness and the benefit of staying soft and what that actually means and feels like.
Where did that? So you say that these are like where you are right now when you create them. Mm-hmm. What does the softness? Can you tell the story behind what got you thinking about that?
Yeah. So it all goes back to when I was 17, experiencing the extremely hard journey of grieving for the first time as a teen. I made a promise to myself that I was going to try to create beauty in the face of hardship and loss. And that's the definition of softness, is not fighting hardship with more hardship or hate, but rather just coming back to your ability to love in the face of all of that, to heal yourself.
And to soften.
Yeah.
Yeah, if you think about what a scar is, it's something hard, and then when it's healed.
Yeah.
You know, so you went from stickers to a billboard.
Yeah.
Can you walk me through that sort of thought process of being like, nope, sticker's not big enough.
Yes. The billboard had been in my mind for years. It never was the right time. And then recently I felt like there was so much trauma going on in the world that it was hard to watch the news. I was talking to people every day who were experiencing anxiety, sadness, confusion. And I realized that the time was now to make this message bigger. And I felt powerless at first in the face of all of this chaos in the world. And I was like, this is the time where I need to do this, because this is the time when softness matters the most and it needs to be allowed this time.
Did you have an aha moment driving by a billboard? You could go like skywriting airplane over a football game. I mean, there are like a lot of options. The billboard feels to me like this hidden in plain sight, mm-hmm. like, of course.
And that's why I liked it. I mean, it had been in my mind because it acts in the same way as the stickers. It's there for you. People drive past it and it's discoverable. You can see it and it can mean whatever you want it to mean, or you can drive past it and go on with your day. Like, it's just there for you if you need it, which is what I love about a billboard.
We're going to dig into your backstory a little more, but and I think that's really important. But can we still spend just a little moment longer discussing the logistics of putting up a billboard on your own? How does one even go about that?
If you would have asked me that question 2 months ago, I would have said, I don't know. But I started by just Googling, how do you put up a billboard in Kansas City? And then I just started reading and I found a website called billboards.com. And
for real,
it was so like anticlimactic. I'm like, is this how you do it? And you just kind of get a quote, the price bracket you want and location, and then you send them artwork and they put it up. It's really easy.
It helps to be an artist.
Yeah.
Because of that whole sending artwork piece of
Definitely.
It.
Definitely.
But how did you, so you found a range of prices and a range mm-hmm. of locations. How did you pick the location? Was it just what was available, or did you imagine the people driving this particular route having some particular needs? I think it's a pretty important commuting route during rush hour, and you probably do get a lot of people in standstill mm-hmm. standstill traffic, just staring at it.
To be honest, the location was really synchronistic. It was like the only location that was affordable. So I was like, okay, this is going to have to be the platform for the first affirmation billboard, because it's the cheapest and it's what I can afford right now.
The first. So there are more.
Yes. My goal was to do one a month for a year. And that's still my goal.
So what are some, I know you probably don't want to say what the message is that come next will be, but do you have thoughts that you're sort of kicking around about that?
I have a notebook that I've been keeping with ideas that I add to every single day. And I know that I want to repeat the affirmation that's printed on this one, just because I think it's a really good starting point. And I think that I want to share it a little bit more. But as we grow and I move through more affirmations, I'm hoping to touch more on kindness and softness through the affirmations that I choose to write. But I'm going to let it be really organic. And what feels good when I'm creating and designing the billboard is going to be what comes up.
So like I said, the billboard is uplifting, but the story behind it is really heavy and really dark. And you are treating it in this really light kind of way at this mm-hmm. stage, but I have to imagine it has lived with you as something dark as well.
Yeah, it has been really hard. And I mean, it's been 9 years since that happened to me. I'm 26 now. And
when you lost your father to suicide.
Yeah. And it's been hard this week too, sharing this billboard. It's been kind of making me relive a lot of things. And I'm having conversations with people who are in the same place as I was or have experienced similar things. And it has been kind of cathartic for me as well.
Nicole Leth, stay with me, okay? We will pick this story right back up after the break. I'm Gina Kaufman, and you're listening to KCUR's Central Standard. We're talking to the artist who put up a billboard in hopes of preventing suicide. It's inspired by a personal story, which we're hearing now. Don't go away.
I'm
I'm Gina Kaufman. This is KCUR's Central Standard, and I'm talking to Nicole Leth. She's a Kansas City artist, and she has carried the weight of losing her father to suicide with her since she was 17. She's decided to do what she can about it as just one person, reaching out to strangers needing hope and encouragement, first through stickers, and now by putting up a billboard to give people a message that might brighten a dark day. We're hearing the story that inspired her now. Hi again, Nicole.
Hello.
So in case it's not clear by now, I would like to say, like, we're going to dig into this story. And for our listeners, if talking about suicide makes you uncomfortable and you need support, the National Suicide Prevention Hotline is 1-800-273-8255. We've posted the number on our Twitter account as well. The number again is 1-800-273-8255. 8255. Get help if you need it. Nicole, when I say that, get help if you need it, there's something so simple about that message and so hard about it in a way. Even just being someone who has lived through losing someone to suicide, I've personally found that that experience of that kind of loss is really hard to file away because it's a memory that doesn't live comfortably in the mental Rolodex. It's something that has a tendency to pop back up. Is that what you found?
Yeah. I've learned that when it comes to losing anybody and feeling grief, you don't move on from it. You just move forward and you carry it with you and you learn how to adapt and make the most of it.
So you've talked about that from day one of finding out that you lost your father, that you were going to try to add positivity and hope to the world. Mm-hmm. But you also mentioned that you and your father, you said you shared the same heart.
Yeah.
Can you talk to me more about that?
Yeah, it was incredible, the bond that we had. He felt everything in the world so intensely. And he loved everybody with every fiber of his being. And he would have conversations with me about how important it was to give people second chances, or how important it was to tell people that they were enough, or how important it was to just create a safe space for somebody to heal in. And I mean, I was a young preteen having these conversations with him, and it instilled in me such a knowledge about what it means to be a human and lead with your heart.
Do you remember what would inspire those conversations? I mean, you were, as you said, very young, and that's not quite the, like, dad, why is the sky blue?
Yeah. I think it would always come really organically. We took a lot of road trips together, and, you know, when you're on the road, like, topics just come up. And he was somebody who struggled with addiction, and he would always bring me to his AA meetings. I'd been going to AA meetings since I was in fourth grade. And after the meeting was over, we'd talk about the experiences that we heard people share. And we'd talk about how even though they were struggling, they were still worthy and lovable and strong humans. And we'd just talk about what all of it meant. And it would just go to those places that were really meaningful for somebody who is developing in the world.
Yeah. I feel sad that the world doesn't have your dad listening to you talk about him.
I do too. I think, you know, it would have been really special to have him here.
You talked about that putting up this billboard where you are sharing an affirmation with anyone in Kansas City who might need it. Mm-hmm. You've mentioned that talking about it publicly in the news has caused you to relive some things from that moment of, like, learning of your loss. And I don't want to take you there any more than you're comfortable going there. But what can you share with us about where, like, the kinds of things that your mind really had to work through?
The things that my mind had to work through were the things that I think a lot of people who experience suicide have to work through. And that's, could I have showed up differently to make this person want to stay alive? Or did I say I love you enough? Or did I hug them long enough? Or was I good enough? Could I have changed it? And those things, I mean, I thought I had worked through. And then this week, you know, it just comes up again. But now I have the resilience to tell myself that it wasn't about me. And I'm doing the best I can to make beauty in the face of those experiences.
Can you talk about what resilience means to you?
Resilience is showing up every single day and knowing that even if it's the worst day of your life and you lost everything, that you're still the strongest version of yourself.
That is really beautiful. Like, I'm really touched hearing that, but that's a hard thing to do.
It is.
I didn't, you know, I mean, I know you didn't say it is easy, but can you talk about where you find that strength?
I find the strength when I look back on everything hard that I have gotten through. And I remind myself that as of today, I've survived 100% of everything, no matter how it felt. And when I remind myself of that and I understand my capabilities of survival, it lets me know that I can handle whatever's on my plate today.
Can we just like have coffee every single day?
I would love that.
Because I feel like that would be so helpful. I mean, it's amazing to me that you've become this hopeful, helpful person, and that part of how you've become that way is through the grueling act of survival.
Yeah. I mean, it took those experiences to push me into this place. So in a way, I mean, there's a silver lining to everything.
You mentioned that you had to work through thoughts about your father's suicide involving like whether you showed up enough and whether you told him you loved him enough and all those kinds of things, and that you came to realize that it wasn't about you. Can you talk to me about the journey of coming to understand that? What is it that you understand better?
I think it was that I became more self-aware, and I turned in and I looked at my own life and my own struggle, and I realized that on the moments when I decided to uplift myself, it wasn't because someone else told me to. It was because I actively chose to do it for myself. And I realized that it's all only about you or the other person. Like, it took looking into myself to understand that no one else makes me transform. I make myself transform.
Before arriving at the place where you could put that understanding up on a billboard in the form of a sweet, happy message delivering hope on 71 Highway, what were you talked about trying to do it through stickers and other things, mm-hmm. but did you always think that you would do it through art?
You know what? I did. Art always came naturally to me. Writing always came really naturally to me. You know, my dad was a writer too, so I felt like that was a gift that he gave me, was my ability to communicate through words and language. And I knew that it would be in that threshold that I continued to share the beauty and make something out of the tragedies.
Do you have his writings?
Yeah, I do.
Do you have something that he's written that really speaks to you, that feels like... I've had the experience of losing someone when I was young, and I feel like you find ways to continue a conversation when you need it. Mm-hmm. And I'm curious about whether those writings have been something that has kept you in conversation with your dad.
Yeah, 100%. After he passed, I found a whole box of letters he wrote to me but never gave to me. And in every one, it was just about me understanding my worth, making every day count, and fighting to create good. And it felt like this really gorgeous and heartbreaking farewell, but I hold those letters so close to my heart.
And he took you to AA when you were really young. Yeah. What was it like to go to AA as a child?
It was fascinating in both good and bad ways. I was in fourth grade, and I didn't understand a lot of what being a human was about.
Because you're nine.
Because I'm nine. But it made me understand that being a human looks a lot of different ways, and that all of those people, even though they were struggling, that they were still alive and they were doing it and they were showing up to fight for themselves. And I admired that.
So you admired the people you met in AA as a fourth grader?
Yeah, I did. And I loved hearing them talk about their survival and how they were showing up for themselves every day.
You know, even little kids, especially little kids in a way, love stories. And the sort of classic story arc does always involve a struggle.
Mm-hmm.
Suicide is so hard to talk about. And here you are now talking about it, not just with a trusted friend in the safety of a room behind closed doors, but with an entire city, well, right now, the listening audience of a radio station, but even up until now, an entire city's morning commute. You've talked a little bit about what that's been like for you, but I'd like to hear more.
It's been overwhelming in both good and bad ways. it's overwhelming at all of the positive responses I'm receiving, people letting me know that they had the worst day of their life and then they drove by the billboard and they felt like they were going to be okay and that they could go home and appreciate themselves. And it's been hard just having to rip myself open and share my vulnerability with what seems like the entire world. I didn't know that this was going to go viral. I thought I was sharing it with my closest friends and family on my personal Facebook. And I didn't even tell anyone I was doing this for weeks when the billboard went up. And then I shared it and it went viral overnight. And so I feel like I'm having a vulnerability hangover.
So did you imagine that this billboard would go up and people would drive by it, think about it on their own, but that it would be sort of this quiet presence?
That's exactly what I thought. And then I figured when I would keep putting them up, they would start making connections and seeing these all over the city. And it would just be really personal to every single person seeing it.
But not personal about you.
Yeah. And now it is.
So how have people reached out to you? Can you tell me more about the stories people have shared with you, telling you about their hard days that you made better?
Yeah, the stories literally make me cry. It's, you know, people who just lost their son last week to suicide and they drove by and they're like, these are the things that I wish he would have known before he passed. Or people who lost a parent at the same age that I did, reaching out, letting me know that that was really healing for them. Or it's even people who've never encountered suicide, but rather just had a hard day and their boss was a jerk and they're feeling anxious and they drove by and they were like, this made me feel better. Thank you. And all of those things mean so much to me.
What have you learned from engaging in that way?
I've learned that if you create the space and you pour love into it, it creates more ripples of positivity. And it enables people to operate from a place of love. And that's when change happens.
Nicole Leth, thank you so much.
Thank you.
Nicole's billboard says, you are human, you are lovable, you are strong, you are enough. It's on 71 North in Kansas City, and there are going to be more billboards someday. I'm Gina Kaufman. Stay tuned for more Central Standard in a minute. On the face of it, this gorgeous violin music is relatively traditional. But the musician who created it also did this. The artist, Tina Bilberry, known as K Tina to her fans, just released a new EP that took her outside her comfort zone. She doesn't just play violin on these recordings. She's also the composer, the producer, the vocalist. We'll hear some of the songs featuring her singing later on. The album is called Crossed Conversations. It's a very cool project, and K Tina is here to talk with us about it. K Tina, welcome to KCUR Central Standard.
Thank you very much.
The sound we just heard. Tell me more about it. I love it.
It's a collection of my musical experience from around the world and the training that I've received, because I was professionally trained. I am a professionally trained musician, but I've also traveled around the world and I've got to experience different cultures and different styles of music. And it kind of warmed my heart to know that there is more than just what meets the eye. And I kind of wanted to express that in my first EP.
I understand that you have also a lot of local collaborators on this recording. Can you tell me about them?
Yeah, Amado Espinoza. He's a friend of mine from Bolivia, and he's a luthier. He plays charango. He does the natural flutes. Just pretty much anything he gets his hands on. You know, he's a pretty amazing person. And I wanted to do a lullaby, so I did some research on some familiar tunes that maybe would work out with some natural instruments and or native instruments even with that. And I found I could mix some Afro-Caribbean style with a New Zealand tune that I kind of really liked, and I kind of put it together, and I was like, Amato, can you play some flutes on this? And he was just like, okay. And so he brought his chenango to the studio, and then he brought several different flutes that we, you know, sampled and figured out which ones worked best with the sound. And then I added my violin, my voice, and I asked my friend Guy Montez, who plays in the band Cucharada with me, to sing French, because he's from Haiti. So I wanted to bring, you know, cross cultures into the mix. And so I've got this whole blend or fusion of different spaces and places put together in one great big or one sweet lullaby, and it's sung in three languages.
So that brings me to the name of your EP, Crossed Conversations. Yes. Can you tell me more about what that phrase means to you and why you named your album that?
Yeah, because I've been every almost to, feels like every continent. I wanted to bring together the conversation of music because it's a universal language. So I wanted to kind of cross the genres and put them together in one place so that they communicate with each other, and so that people can see that we really are more alike than we are apart.
What's your musical background? I know that you are trained as a classical violinist, yes. But there are so many other influences that my ear can pick up in your music. We'll hear more, but what am I hearing? What's the story of you and what you bring to your music?
Well, like I said before, I started off with classical music, and the other side is...
At what age? I mean, is this lifelong?
Pretty much lifelong, yeah. I remember watching PBS as a little girl and looking at the orchestra on TV and like, what is that? You know, just trying to figure out what this is. Who is that? What are they playing and why? And it wasn't until my brother brought home a violin from school. And I was like, okay, I seen that on TV. What is that? And he started playing and I was just like mesmerized. And I was like, you're going to have to tell me what this is. And he was like, no, if it's not yours, you can't touch it. And I was like, come on, Patrick, you just let me touch it. Just let me touch it. So he finally let me touch it. And he showed me how to play it. And I played on the A string. I'll never forget it. It's a very vivid memory. And it's my first experience with the violin. And it kind of just blew my mind. And I knew I wanted to play the instrument for the rest of my life. So from there, I went from playing, learning how to play classical music. And then because I grew up in a black church, so gospel music really had a huge influence on what I did as well. And so I kind of began to start playing hymns and just different songs from church. And then from there, cultivated into jazz. And then from there, just kind of like it was like a domino effect. And then I went on into different cultures and different styles of music. And then as I started to study abroad and travel abroad, I started to learn there's more than what meets the eye.
Tell me about those travels. You've talked about them, but what took you everywhere?
School and wanting to learn more. When I went to Jamaica, I went there as an intern, actually, a service learning internship, and I got to meet some of the local people, and I discovered that I don't like going to tourist areas because you get more of a tourist experience.
Yeah, but you get like a picture someone painted for you.
Yeah. And I wanted to know more about the culture because I was there to work with the children. So I'm like, okay, well, what can I do to learn more about the people who are native to this land? And I started interacting more with natives and just learning about their neighborhoods and going to different places that they like to hang out. And I started to respect a little bit more of who other people are in their own environment. And that kind of just opened up my mind to being a little bit more accepting of who people are and where they're from. And then I got a chance to go to Kenya, and same thing happened in Kenya. I was just like, this is amazing. Why
what
don't
took you
we
to
no
Kenya?
Another internship.
Okay, I'm taking notes.
Another internship took me to Kenya, and I was just like, this is amazing. You know, I never knew that outside of the United States, culture was so authentic, you know, because what we see on TV is not what we experience when we actually go there and live amongst the people. It's a completely mind-boggling experience. And then, I went to Argentina.
Can you give an example of something you saw in Kenya that really, like, shifted your worldview?
Yeah, okay. So it's more connected to nature. Two experiences. I was on a safari bus, and we were traveling through... So just wherever the safaris go. I mean, they take pretty much take you everywhere. And there was this vast lens, and I was seeing the zygotes and the zebras, and I was like, wow, look at there. There's a lion way off in the distance, and there's elephants over here. And I was like, wow, this is really awesome. Now I can understand why they feel the earth, because they're so connected to the earth with how they live. And I started to get a sense of the beat and the and how the harmonies work. And I remember it started
thinking
raining.
About Kenyan music in connection with the yeah. way you were experiencing Kenyan mm-hmm. culture.
Yeah, and they were playing their music, and you could hear some reggae, and I was like, reggae, that's kind of Jamaican. But they were playing all sorts of kind of music, but it was all still rooted in the same foundation. And I remember seeing rain, and I remember hearing the rhythm of the rain against the beat of the van that we were in. And I remember when our van got stuck in a mud puddle, it was just crazy, you know, how we all kind of just, you know, no matter who we are, were or where we came from, we still came together to come out of that pot and out of that pothole. But, you know, it sounds so insignificant, but it is significant because of how it brought us together. And so that's how my music is. I'm like, well, music can do the same thing. If a pothole can something as simple as a pothole can bring people together, why not use music, which is the universal language anyway? Because if you can't understand the words that I say, you can understand the music that I feel. So yeah.
So I mentioned earlier that you sing on this album.
Yes.
And one of the songs with your vocals in it is a cover of God Bless the Child.
Yes.
Before we listen to what you do with the song, is there anything you want to say about the song itself, its history? Does it mean something special to you?
It does. It's how do I put that in words? It's something that my ancestry is rooted in, you know, and it comes from the essence of who of what my culture here is in America as a Black American. It speaks volumes to how we can put jazz together with the gospel and make it something completely new. And it speaks volumes to who we are as a people, and that we share it, and that we can share it and are able to share it with anybody who's willing to listen.
So the track on the EP, it sounds like a live recording.
Yeah.
Tell me about where it was performed and set the scene for us before we listen.
Well, it's a mixture of studio and live, because, you know, sometimes you kind of get a little off balance.
Yeah.
So you got to go back and fix a couple of notes. But it was actually recorded live with a small studio audience in a basement.
In the basement.
Yeah. I had a small group of people there, and we kind of just went for it.
Okay, well, this is Katina's version of God Bless the Child from her new EP, Crossed Conversations.
Them that's God shall get. Them that's not shall lose. So the Bible says, and it still is news. Yeah, mama may have and papa may have, but God bless the child that's got his own.
What is your singing background, Katina? I mean, specifically, you have an awesome voice.
Thank you.
It's really full and powerful, but with this crystal clear effortlessness. Not that it's effortless to sing like that, but you make it sound that way. I don't hear you pushing the limits of your range or your volume. You're like a bird.
Oh, thank you. I started singing in the Sunshine Band at church when I was a little girl, and then kind of from there, Sunshine Band, which is a choir for little kids, and then
in Kansas City,
Kansas, yeah, which is where I'm from. Excuse me. And as I got older, I started singing. My sisters and I, we created a group called You Live Vessels, and we started singing gospel music all over, and not all over the country, but, you know, the metropolitan area. We went to different places, and from there, we kind of just started, our vocals kind of just developed over the years. And I'm not one to try and force anything. So I was like, I'll sing background. I'll let you have a front. But they were like, no, you need to come out and you need to, you know, do your own thing and make sure that you hone your craft and develop your skill. Because if it's a God-given gift, you need to develop it. And so, you know, my sisters wouldn't let me sit back and not do anything. I was like, I just play my violin. They're like, no.
I love it. Like, your brother didn't want you to touch his violin, but your sisters were like, you can't just do that. You have to sing too.
Exactly. It's like, what? What happened here?
Being in a big family seems to be a part of how you became the musician you are.
Actually, you're right about that. Yeah. I have seven siblings and it's eight of us total, including myself. So it's, yeah, four boys, four girls. And it was a very interesting upbringing experience, to say the least.
Can you talk about the range of sounds that you bring together? Because, you know, we heard a little taste of the very classical sounding music you can do. And also, like, when you're bringing in your own beats and drawing on different influences. And we're going to hear next a song that does more of the original material kind of thing.
I started experimenting actually with sounds because I wanted to see what else the violin could do. So I started researching bluegrass. Because I had a friend in middle school who played bluegrass, and he taught me how to play this song. I have no idea what the name of it was. He never told me, but it's like da 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 da. That's the introduction. Da 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 He showed me how to do it where the instruments and where we had lockers where we keep our instruments. And so he showed me how to play that. And so I was like, OK, I remember playing bluegrass when I was in middle school and I never forgot how to play that song. So then I started trying to see if I could find it. And I came across Casey Dreesen and he started doing this thing called the chop. I was just like, what's this? This is something new. And it actually is like this percussive sound that you do with your bow against the strings of the instrument. And and it's like really down at the last bottom 3 inches of the frog, and you get these right, or right, these different percussive sounds. I was just like, okay, how do you do that? So then I started studying that, and then he added a bass line. I was just like, oh, you can do a full band with this sound. So then on the piece like Talking in E Minor, you'll hear those percussive sounds in the background, and you'll hear all these tricks that are extended techniques on the violin, and you'll hear a, you know, and I mean, it's just crazy. I kind of went to town on it, and I added a bass line, boom, and I mixed a little jazz in it, and then like just went to town.
Well, the song that we're actually going to hear now is a Katina original with singing. This is On the Moon. Let's listen and then talk. Okay, so this is On the Moon by Katina from her new EP, Crossed Conversations, and go.
Wall to wall as we walk by, hands up in the air cause the DJ got this party fly. Step, sway into the night. We came here to do what we came to do. Forget about what we've been through. Hey, we were buzzing.
So what are we hearing? Talk to me about this tune. It is very danceable.
Yeah, I've always dreamed about doing a concert on the moon. And so there was a friend of mine, Asa Barnes, who we've been talking about. Like,
I just want to make sure everyone heard that. You want to do a concert on the moon. Go on.
Yeah, it's like a dream of mine to do a concert on the moon. And I was just like, Asa, I found a song. Well, I kind of wrote a song that we can like do, and like he's really good at pop music, so it kind of all just started coming together. I was like, "Yeah, can you sing this?" He was like, "Okay," and we just went into the studio and we just started working and working and working, and it came together. And it, in essence, On the Moon.
So we've talked a lot about how you bring different sounds together, but I wonder how Kansas City is for you as a place to push those boundaries between genres and actually musical worlds. I might be wrong, but I get the impression that there's this whole world of gospel music here in town. There's a very separate world of classical music and a whole nother separate world of like experimental sound and experimental music. And you fuse those sounds, but are you able to fuse those worlds like in your life and in your work?
You know, I thought it was going to be more of a challenge than what it actually is. And I found that there is a hunger and a thirst for what I do, something that is very unique and different and just not the status quid pro quo. And I didn't realize how thirsty people are for something new, different, and tasteful at the same time.
What does this new EP mean to you on a personal level?
It's my heart. It's the heart and soul of who I am and my experience as a musician, but not just as a musician, as a person, as a mother, as a sister, as a friend, as a cousin, as an auntie. You know, it's something that I wanted it to reach out to families. The biggest thing for me was that I wanted to create something that mothers would want their daughters to hear and fathers wouldn't mind their sons listening to. You know, I wanted it to be something that was tasteful and respectful so that everybody could get a piece of it and take it as their own. You know, not something that's over-sexualized or demeaning. You know, I wanted it to be specifically tasteful so that everybody could enjoy it.
Like hip and tasteful.
Yeah.
I want to play the end of a song we heard a little bit of earlier where your voice comes in at just the very end.
It's
like spoken word poetry,
yeah.
Basically. And you talk about yourself as the creator of this music. The song is Talking in E minor, but here's the part I am talking about.
Okay.
You know, I've come to a place where I can't seem to provide for the me inside. The necessity of love, truth, and accomplishment. Should I take the wide road or the road less traveled? Need to transverse this verse and get away from this curse. It's time to wake up, remove the makeup, and find the inner me that really is to be. The product of love, joy, presented musically. How I long for the day that I see the one who was, is, and is to come. For I know him, I feel him, I get tickled by the touch of him. So here we are, you and me, wrapped up in the essence of three, coming to a place where I appreciate the mind inside, express myself musically, finally in a place where I want to be. Katina, the past is shed, drop the mic, boom, girl. Enough said.
Ooh, explain that.
Yeah, I was in a place where I was in an emotional place. You know, we could call it that time of the month for a woman. We could. But at the end of this, I really wanted to put in a poem at the end of it. And I was just like, but I wanted to be authentic and true. And just talk about the evolution of where I've come from and how far I've come to where I am today. And I thought about all the past experiences, the failures, the accomplishments, the hardships, the triumphs. And I was just like, well, yeah, you know, I do have this background. And if I'm going to be authentic to myself, I need to speak my own truth. And so that's what I did.
Is that a tension between like the violin and the rest of you in some way?
No, because I think the violin and I are one. It's more of trying to put into words what I'm feeling through my music.
So when you say, like, you talk about the difference between the wide road and the road less traveled, that really intrigued me.
Yeah, the wide road is where you just give up everything. So, well, not everything. It's where you take the easy way out of situations or...
You go the way everyone else is going.
Yeah, and you follow the group. But if you take the road less traveled, you're pretty much creating your own path and you're developing your own journey and you're staying true to your authentic self. You know, you can't do that when you're following a group or if you're mixed in a crowd. You can't be seen because you're, you know, it's too many people. But if you go in your own direction, you find yourself in a much better place. It may not be the easiest, but it's more self-fulfilling, and you actually end up being more of a greater positive influence than somebody who just falls by the wayside, you know, just privy to whatever is coming next.
Katina, Tina Bilberry, congratulations on your EP, and thanks for being here today.
Thank you.
The album is called Crossed Conversations, and it's just been released. Check it out. We cannot all be Katinas, virtuosos on an instrument that expresses something within us that words never could. If I picked up the violin today, it would not reveal some beautiful inner truth or conversations about the universality of humanity. It would sound bad, and I am not sure that I would get the same kind of pass that we'd give a child squeaking through those first lessons. But does that mean that I shouldn't bother? Not according to Laurel Parks, who runs a group to encourage adults to be pursuing brave new instruments by helping them let go of their inhibitions. Intern Riley Kester has the story.
People of all ages gather in the bright and colorful ceramics gallery at Belger Crane Yard Studios. They mingle over a table filled with cheese, crackers, cookies, and wine. They're here on a Thursday evening to socialize. But also... This is a class called Drunken Fiddles, where adults learn to play the violin. Wendy West Cummins is a beginner student and says it's pretty hard.
I sat through 15 years of violin lessons with my daughter, and so I thought that I would just learn it by osmosis, but you can't really do that. I think I know enough to know that I sound bad when I sound bad.
The class has less emphasis on the drunken part and more on the fiddle part, although they do drink a little wine while they play.
You have to balance the drinking, because if you drink too much, you're really bad. I mean, I say too much, like if you have a whole glass of wine before the class, then you don't play as well, but you don't care as much, so...
Laurel Parks started Drunken Fiddles in 2015.
It's like a very positive, like gentle environment. So it's just kind of like, hey, we're going to have fun. You don't have to be perfect. It's not formal. It's Drunken Fiddles.
She's played the violin for 34 years.
And it's so cool when you're 4 years old to feel like a sense of what you're supposed to do in your life. But I remember that feeling, and like that's what I wanted to do.
Laurel has played with several bands and symphony orchestras throughout her career. She's currently playing in the string duo, The Wires. Those who come to Drunken Fiddles don't have to know how to play. Three classes back-to-back accommodate all levels of learners. The seven students in the beginner class gather in a circle, pull out their instruments, and warm up. They start the class not by playing the fiddle, but instead by sharing their plans for the weekend. Then they begin to play. Laurel stands at the front of the class, hoisting her violin to her chin. She stomps her feet to a simple tune, and all together they play a song called Boil 'em Cabbage. Their instruments squeak, and they all laugh about it. They're in it together. Because they're here not to just learn how to play the violin, they're in it for the social aspect, too.
You have to get used to not sounding good for a while. And I tell my beginner students, I'm like, you know what? You are going to feel like you didn't improve at all until the last class. So just stick with it. And then they usually come in and they're like, you know what? I think I got a little bit better.
Valerie Lewis plays the cello alongside the violin players. She dreams to one day play in the Kansas City Symphony. But for now, she's learning to play alongside her friends at Drunken Fiddles.
It's a good social group thing for me, being a native San Franciscan and being in Kansas 4 years and lonely. This is a great thing I did.
Wendy West Cummins did something she had never done before at the final class of the six-week session. She played Twinkle Twinkle Little Star as a solo in front of everyone.
I played a solo tonight, which other people had done it, and I thought, well, they're brave enough to do it, so I should be brave enough to do it. And it's a supportive enough environment where I felt like I could do it and be successful and have that support of my peers.
Drunken Fiddles means a lot to Laurel. She started the class at a time when she wasn't sure what to do next in her musical career.
It wasn't always fun learning an instrument, and I lost my love of it for a while. And so just doing something like this just kind of brings that whole love back for playing and music and what it's about.
That was a dispatch from the Drunken Fiddles class at the Belger. It was started by Laurel Parks, and KCUR's Riley Kester checked it out for us. That's a wrap for today's show. You can find any of this morning's conversations online at kcur.org/centralstandard. We'll have them ready for you by the end of the day. kcur.org/centralstandard. Tomorrow, we will revisit a conversation with a scientist who has discovered new species, figured out how to regenerate dead cells, regenerate dead cells. His life story tomorrow at 10. This show is produced by Melody Rowell, Ann Kniggendorf, and intern Riley Kester, with lots of support from senior producer Sylvia Maria Gross. I'm Gina Kaufman, and Up to Date is next.